It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying. There is no running, there is no hiding. There's only fighting or dying. It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying. There is no running, there is no hiding. There's only fighting or dying.
It's Going Down is a digital community center from anarchist, anti-fascist, autonomous, anti-capitalist, and anti-colonial movements. Our mission is to provide an autonomous and resilient platform to publicize and promote revolutionary theory and action.
Go to itsgoingdown.org for daily updates. Check out our online store for ways to donate and rate and follow us on iTunes if you like this podcast.
So I'm Birdie, she, her, hers, with the Southern New England region of the SRA.
I'm Cryo, or Jay, he, him, his, and I'm also with the Southern New England chapter of the SRA, but also am the National Director of Instruction for the org.
Well, let's start off. Let's talk about the history of the Socialist Rifle Association. There's an excellent interview I would encourage people to read. We will link that in our show notes. That people with the SRA did with the anti-fascist network in the UK, which does amazing work over there. I was shocked to learn that there is a very long history to the SRA that I did not know anything about. It involves, unfortunately, Facebook drama, it seems, but also kind of like, evolving out of something that began online and kind of coming into the real world, which I found really interesting. But I'm just curious if you can just talk about the history of the group. I mean, however much you want to get into it.
Sure. I'll take this one since I'm coming at it from the national perspective. So the SRA, as it currently exists, has been around since about 2018 or so. Though, as you alluded to, we're far from the first or only organization ever to organize under the name of the Socialist Rifle Association. But in 2017, a number of groups that were organizing under that name decided to form a coalition, which ended up incorporating as the actual SRA in 2018. Started out with a few hundred members and underwent some significant changes and the aforementioned Facebook drama and all of that. I joined the organization in early 2019, and at that point, our particular chapter had, I think, about 20 members. At this point, we've grown to approximately 200 members, and similarly, the national organization, just in the about 2 years that I've been in the SRA, has about quintupled in size. I believe it was approximately 2,000 people when I joined, and we've just crested 10,000 members. And over the last year and a half or so, we've established chapters in almost every state, and we definitely have members in every state of the country at this point. And the thing I think that brings in new members for us is two things. One, every time, essentially every time that Bernie Sanders got shit on, we experienced a huge boost in membership as people started to realize that maybe voting wasn't the only thing that they could do. But we also engage in a lot of disaster relief and mutual aid, which really helps boost our popularity in the places where we organize. And I think that those two things together, drive our membership, but also keep us engaged in our local communities on top of all the gun stuff, obviously.
So the organization itself is organized into a nonprofit. Just tell us a little bit about, what is the SRA? Like, what are its goals? What's the ideology behind it? Who makes up its membership?
Sure. So the SRA, like you said, we're organized as a nonprofit out of Kansas at this point. And so each chapter is given very broad discretion in how it wants to organize and the things that it wants to accomplish. But the three things that basically underpin the organization and our mission are mutual aid, disaster relief, and of course, firearms education. And as the director of instruction for the organization, it's my goal to see sometime within the next few years that we start establishing credentials in as many states as possible where someone who wants to learn about firearms can take an SRA branded course and get whatever permit their state requires. Currently, we are capable of doing that in Connecticut, Wisconsin, and Minnesota, and we're making progress on about a dozen other states. But to me, one of the things that the SRA is uniquely positioned to do is to be a gateway into leftism for people, but also a gateway into firearms ownership for people who are traditionally excluded, which is not to say that the disaster relief and mutual aid work that we do isn't extremely important. It's just that we are the only organization that does this particular thing. And I might be biased, you know, again, as the director of instruction, but I think firearms education is probably the most important thing that we do.
Just to circle back on that, you said that in certain states, the SRA is allowed to be a certified instructor. Explain why that's important and explain how, in general, groups like the NRA have basically had a monopoly on that.
Well, if you actually go into many states' laws and statutes, the NRA is called out by name as the organization that certifies people to get their firearms permits, which is, you know, a ridiculous monopoly to give them, especially given how toxic the organization's become over the last 30 or 40 years. And so what we consider it extremely important to offer people an alternative, because just speaking as someone who's educated about 130 people over the last few months or so, several dozen of them have outright told me that they would never have attempted to get their pistol permit if they had to take an NRA course. And in fact, a student that I had last weekend just said straight up, when she tried to take the NRA course, the instructor was a straight up white supremacist. And so when you put up a barrier like that, how can we expect people who don't fit the mold of the quote unquote typical gun owner to even approach the idea of gun ownership, especially in parts of the country like this, which, as you and Bertie were talking about before we started this interview, you know, firearms ownership is very much an opt-in thing in the Northeast and in places like urban California and other places where we have significant membership. And if we don't provide an alternative to the NRA, then very few people are going to opt in, because they're going to have this perception that firearms ownership is exclusively the domain of the kind of people that support the messaging that the NRA puts out, which is, you know, disgusting and toxic and extremely reactionary.
Do you want to say anything about the ideas and the ideology behind the SRA? My understanding is it's basically a pan-socialist group, meaning you have everybody from Marxist to anarchist to socialist.
Oh yeah, we definitely we are like a big tent organization, and I think the fact that we have a focused mission, you know, on firearms education is what keeps everyone from arguing too much. Though, I mean, you put four leftists in a room and you'll get five different tendencies coming out. But by focusing people on the actual work that has to be done, we are, you know, that keeps us from bickering too much. You know, we have some people that like to poke at each other a bit, but for the most part, we do good work by focusing on the work that has to be done. And I would say that broadly speaking, I don't remember the exact numbers of our last demographic survey, but I think approximately a quarter of our organization identifies as anarchist, about a quarter of Marxist-Leninist, and then the other half are a variety of everything from democratic socialist to even the occasional liberal who has somehow found our organization.
Gotcha. Well, in the interview you did with the Anti-Fascist Action Network in the UK, you stated that you have 10,000 members. I'm just curious, is that based on, like, people that have signed up online? Is that people that are paying dues? And also, let's talk a little bit more about what those people actually do. You mentioned mutual aid and the firearms training. Let's get into that a little bit. What is the SRA doing, you know, day to day?
So we count our membership roles as anyone who has signed up and is currently in good standing, which is to say that they are up to date on their dues and, you know, not subject to any kind of disciplinary action or anything. So we just crested 10,000 members on that, though we are offering some level of dues amnesty right now, of course, due to the pandemic. You know, we wouldn't want anyone to not be in good standing just because their job has been temporarily suspended. suspended or shuttered because of COVID. So yeah, we count anyone as a member who has signed up and is up to date on their dues. And we maintain those records. We have a national records director who liaises with each chapter secretary to maintain, you know, those numbers. As far as what each chapter or what each member actually does, again, that's very much up to the discretion of the individual chapters. The national organization doesn't mandate a heck of a lot in terms of how the chapters go about their mission. So we're, Bertie and I are probably best suited to talk about what the Southern New England chapter is doing. And since the pandemic has started, one of the things that we've been doing a lot of is working with local mutual aid organizations, food justice orgs, things like that, in order to provide food, PPE, medical supplies, and other things like that to people in the community. So we have about three or four orgs that we're working with in Connecticut to do that. Massachusetts and Rhode Island are spinning up their own mutual aid efforts. And I think it was just yesterday, actually, we delivered several dozen sets of winter clothing to the houseless in the area. So that is the kind of thing that we are doing when we're currently unable to gather in the numbers that we'd like to in order to do firearms training for social distancing reasons. Yeah, that's the kind of thing that we do on the day to day, in addition to, you know, sending each other spicy memes and things like that.
I'm just thinking about, since the pandemic started, like, we've also just been, you know, as Kriya said, like, training, like, hella people. I think, like, the pandemic plus anxiety around the election just really got people more interested. And that was a pretty big task for us, just because we don't have near as many instructors as we'd like. But we were just, I want to say, you know, every weekend running, like, full basic firearms training classes, and not just for people who had just joined the organization, just like people in the community that got connected to us through those, you know, mutual aid connections. A lot of the time were just reaching out, having heard of us, and we're like, can you train me? And we're always like, yeah, sure, we got you, you know. So that's what we've been really busy with.
Well, you know, one thing I wanted to ask, both the Socialist Rifle Association and It's Going Down were mentioned in a recent think tank piece that came out a couple months ago. And It's Going Down, they were saying that we were behind, like, the shadowy network of protests that happened because we had boosted one tweet. But what they said about the SRA was, I think, deserves a little more in-depth look at. They said that the SRA was, in fact, a militia, a left-wing militia. And I know that you all don't agree with that label. And I'm just curious, why is it important for you to reject the term militia?
There's legal and there's practical implications for avoiding the term militia. And the legal implication is that in some states, if you are a militia, you're required to submit member rolls to the Secretary of State every year and register as an actual militia. And then the practical side of things is that were we to be a left-wing militia, we would be unable to engage in training people in any legally recognized way. No one is going to accept a certification of training from a left-wing militia. Whereas if we are a nonprofit educational organization, it's much easier to work within the system insofar as we have to do that in order to get people licensed. So avoiding the label militia enables us to do the work that we do.
I'd also add to that that, like, a militia has, like, a really particular, like, historical context in the United States as far as, like, the history of settler colonialism. So I, as a Black woman, really reject the idea that I'm in a militia. It just, yeah, it's tied up in a lot of those icky concepts. So I would not feel comfortable identifying as such.
Well, I think that what you brought up is really interesting, because even, like, when we refer to the Second Amendment, it says, you know, a well-regulated militia.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk a little bit about that. Like, what does it mean to be involved in, ostensibly, you know, organizing around guns, so to speak? but also everything in the U.S. that we've been brought up to believe associated with gun culture is associated more or less with this kind of idea of militias defending the homeland against, you know, the barbarians outside the gates, or, you know, the runaway slaves, or, you know, the striking workers or whatever.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's like 100%, right? And I'd say that that's a space that, you know, we're still figuring it out. I have no perfect answers. I think, how can I best say this? Like, in some ways, the entire concept of like creating an alternative to, you know, like the standard, like, right, like settler colonialist, like 2A, like gun culture. I think in that we've just sort of like reacted by saying like, they're this and we're not that for like a while. And now we're doing the work of really, you know, looking at, like the history of the Second Amendment, the history of, I personally am really interested in Black liberation stories and firearms within that. So I'm always looking at like Harriet Tubman and John Brown and like the Black Panthers myself. And trying to build something new that is deeply intentional and thoughtful, which requires kind of like pushing a lot of that like desire to react to whatever the right is doing out of my mind, so that I can focus on those histories and pull what's useful from them to, it's not even really like creating, right? Like all those stories have always been here. But I don't think that we as the left or whatever you want to call, like, have grappled with those histories and thought about them. So that's what I'm looking forward to doing with the SRA. And that's some of the vision work that we're doing right now.
One of the things I wanted to set up this interview for is that you all have a big project that's kind of on the horizon. So let's kind of get into that. Tell us about what the big project is. We mentioned on This Is America. What is it, and why is it important to y'all?
Yeah, Cryo, you want to take that one for
first?
Yeah.
I can take it first. So we are, as you said, we're conducting a fundraising drive in order to break ground on a shooting range that will be shared amongst all of the collective New England and upstate New York chapters of the SRA. And we felt that this was an important project because, especially in Southern Connecticut, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Connecticut, there's basically no public land available for shooting. So any time that we want to go shooting or train someone or run people through a class or anything like that, we're required to go to a private range or a gun club or something like that. And these are not always necessarily the most welcoming of environments for the kind of people that we're training, or even for the kind of people that we are. I can say personally that as an Asian man, as a person of color, I don't feel welcome in some of the ranges that I have to go to sometimes. And on top of that, I just, it's not a great feeling that every time we pay someone at the front desk, we know that we're basically directly giving money to the right-wing reactionary part of gun culture. So it's important to us to have a place that is ours, where we can train safely, where we can bring people that we bring guests that we have vetted, where we can provide them with the level of training that they need, and just a place where when we are shooting, when we're doing the work that we do, we're able to devote our entire mental bandwidth to doing it. Because when you do feel like you're under threat at a shooting range, you can't fully concentrate on what you're doing, because there might be someone next to you who, like when I went to the range a couple months ago, had a Deus Vulture on, you know, a Crusader neo-Nazi type. So how am I supposed to work on my marksmanship when I constantly have to worry that the guy next to me might turn his gun on me? You know, it's not an environment that's amenable to good mental health or to efficient training or anything like that. So we need a space where we don't have to worry about that kind of thing.
Well, yeah, my next question was that what's wrong with current gun rages? You kind of already mentioned that. I believe there was some recent incident I heard of. It was either SRA or maybe the John Brown Gun Club where they actually, the owner, like, called the police on them saying, like, we've got the Antifa here down at the gun range or something like that. I don't know. I mean, like, I guess anything else you want to say on kind of, like, what exists already currently?
Yeah, I could say a little bit more about, like, where I'm coming from. I live in Massachusetts, and I actually just started the process to become an instructor, which is exciting. Admittedly, I did not get into the SRA to really get, like, heavy into firearms. I was really more in the vein of community defense around, like, building stronger affinity in communities. And I do some work in restorative and transformative justice, which sometimes makes folks laugh when they find out that I also have a gun hobby. They're like, wait, are these two things, like, can they exist in the same person? I'm like, I guess they do. But yeah, so, like, the thing about ranges being private is really hard for becoming an instructor, because then you have to go through, or I guess you have to go through, like, a process to you know, like, have a contract with a range or however, because otherwise you can't teach, like, at the range, because it's a liability issue for them. So that means, like, you know, a lot of time becoming certified through the NRA. Some folks can become certified right now in Massachusetts through the Liberal Gun Club. But even that, you know, like, if they find out that you're a Liberal Gun Club instructor, not an NRA instructor, they're kind of like, wait a minute, like, who this? So, yeah, I mean, I don't really trust that, you know, these ranges, especially with just, like, how many FASH are out there, aren't keeping tabs on, like, who's weird, like, who's bringing in too many, like, people of color or, like, maybe visibly queer folks, and, like, keeping an eye on that. The majority of our instructors are, I believe, are cishet white men. So, yeah, there's that. And we actually had an instructor who got booted from his range pretty recently. Like, they were definitely monitoring him, probably based on, like, they probably noticed that he didn't really seem like he fit in 100%. You know, they're looking for us. They know we're out there. So yeah, for me, like, with I'm training to become an instructor, I believe that I'm pretty visibly queer and Black and a woman, and I really want to be able to train. We have a lot of folks who are interested in training, but don't feel comfortable with the instructors that we have right now. So I would be able to fill that space. But I'm not really excited about the idea of rolling up to the range as me with, like, another marginalized person, you know, alone. I'm really, like, unapologetic about taking up space. Like, I go to the range right now. And sometimes, you know, like, people will try to engage with me, be like, oh, hi, like, it's totally fine that you're here. I think they, like, are trying to figure out, like, if I'm, like, kind of one of them. I mean, some Proud Boys are people of color, right? And it's, like, really awkward. It's just really awkward because I'm just like, I don't want to talk to you. I'm just assuming, like, the worst about you because, like, that's how I keep me safe. And yeah, so for me, the range, like, for people like me and myself, like, having our own space would really just, you know, like, give us a space where we can really truly, like, focus on, you know, as Cryo said, like, the work that we're trying to do and not have to have that, like, secondary, you know, that, like, anxiety around, like, when is the shit gonna pop off?
You know, I wanted to ask, as more people of color, more queer folks, more people on the left have bought arms over the course of the Trump administration, have you seen kind of the wider gun space culture change at all? I mean, is it changing, or is that just the, you know, the right has such a monopoly kind of on those spaces, whether it's gun shows or ranges, that that hasn't changed. It's just more people that have bought firearms.
Yeah, I mean, like, I haven't really felt, I'll say I haven't felt a change. Like, I've been kind of, like, waiting for it. In my very, like, you know, limited to what I know here in Massachusetts, like, I have been having way more conversations about people getting armed or wanting to get armed than, like, I really ever have. But I don't, like, I look through, like, gun magazines when I'm at my local range, because they're funny. And I had the experience of looking through this, like, particular magazine, and I was like, what's weird about this? And I was like, oh, there are no people of color. There was, like, one woman, you know, and they're advertising, like, a pink, like, some bullshit for a handgun, or, like, those concealed purses that are trash. And I was just like, wow, these people do not give a fuck about diversity. They are not trying to appeal to me at all. Yeah, I don't really feel like they're gonna, you know, I know people think things about, like, oh, well, if people of color are buying stuff, like, the market, well, wait, maybe we don't think that the market will appeal to the buyer, whatever that bullshit is. But yeah, I personally haven't, I don't even see, like, that many other people of color when I'm at the range, and especially Black folks, I do not see them.
Well, just to turn back to the facility, I think a lot of people would think, like, wow, like, if SRA bought a gun range, wouldn't that just, like, you know, give, you know, every FBI agent in the vicinity just, you know, like, oh, perk their interest to the maximum. I mean, obviously there's nothing illegal about people, you know, going to a gun range. I mean, people do it all the time. We've been talking about it. But just the fact that the SRA is on the left, and, you know, like we said, there's this perception that if anybody is, like, learning about firearms or training with them, they're somehow forming some, like, super secret militia.
Like I said, we operate the SRA above board as a 501c4, but we also tell people when they join the organization to operate on the assumption that we are infiltrated, that we're already full of cops and FBI, and that people should conduct themselves accordingly, make sure that everything that they're doing is in line with the sort of thing that they would do when engaging with an educational nonprofit organization. So in terms of the range, it's just a physical manifestation of that. We'll be incorporating the range under the auspices of some sort of 501 type organization, the exact details still to be determined, but we do intend to follow all of the local laws, regulations, everything like that. Because at the end of the day, there isn't really a lot we can do if the state were to try to fabricate some kind of charge against us. And so we can't allow that to prevent us from doing the work that we do, though we do need to do it in a way that is, you know, squeaky clean, of course. So when we opened this range, in order to maintain some order and in order to maintain good conduct there, it will be restricted to SRA members, vetted guests, students attending a class there. It won't be a public range, which will, we believe, reduce the chances of any kind of conflagration or anything like that. But we intend to operate this range under the assumption that we are under surveillance, because I have no doubt that we will be, and they will have nothing to find.
Oh, yeah, I was just going to say, like, yeah, I'm feeling that. And yeah, like, to your point, like, the state definitely does not want people like us to have this. Like, I would 100% agree with that. Like, of course. And I think, you know, like, that knowledge, it can be, like, really scary. And I think that fear is, like, a valid thing for us to feel, and, like, it's a valid state for someone to, like, exist in. But I don't really think that I don't think that centering fear in the work that you're doing really helps move the needle on that work. So, like, for me, like, I let myself, like, feel that. Like, I'm like, ooh, like, I'm anxious, like, the feds, like, whatever, all that. And I just let myself feel that. And I'm really into, like, feeling and honoring things. So, you know, I honor it. And then I say, okay, like, I feel that way. And I'm still going to do this work because I know that it's vital and I know that it needs to happen. Like, we have this vision to create an alternative leftist gun culture. And that, you know, as I think I said earlier, is pushing, you know, against the very foundation of this country. You know, like the first harm, the theft of indigenous land, and then the second harm, slavery. And, you know, those involved force, those involved firearms, right? And, you know, I do spend a lot of time thinking about, like, well, you know, those things considered, the right to bear arms, you know, like, is it, you know, like, too deeply, like, perhaps, like, permanently embedded in those harms? Like, can I ever extract it from those? But, yeah, like, you know, there's practical things that we're doing that we mentioned to make the space safe. And I also, you know, kind of think that when your existence is a threat, how much safety is even materially available to you?
And how much are you shooting for, and where is it at right now, the fundraiser?
So our current goal is, I believe, $93,500. And we are just a hair shy of a quarter of the way there. We've raised $21,605 as of this very moment.
Woo!
And that is that will be enough for us to, you know, construct our range, construct facilities, set up everything that needs to be set up. Though we are intending to break ground, you know, regardless, it's just that that overall goal allows us to have the range that we want. Though with a lesser amount, we're still going to make do. Though, you know, I'm not telling people to not donate money to us because we'll do. But what I am saying is that we are going to break ground on this range in one way or the other.
So when they say, why do you burn down the community? Why do you burn down your own neighborhood? It's not ours. We don't own anything. The social contract is broken. You broke the contract when you killed us in the streets and didn't give a fuck. As I'm concerned, they could burn this bitch to the ground.
Fuck le racisme d'état, oui, nique la police nationale. Black lives matter, y'a longtemps qu'on sonne l'alarme, on a le point levé, qu'on soit noir, blanc ou arabe. Pas de justice, pas de paix, donc c'est la guerre qu'on déclare. Violence raciste sociale ou violence patriarcale, même combat contre le gouvernement, le capital, we can't breathe. C'est quoi que vous comprenez pas aux dirigeants du monde entier, rangez vos bla bla bla. Et ça fait bam 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 dans les manifs quand ils tirent, ça fait oh 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 les lacrymos qu'on inspire. Et ça fait aïe 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 la souffrance de nos darons à l'usine, contre trop d'identité aux jeunes de quartier qui veulent juste vivre. Après des siècles d'esclavage, vous êtes bien enrichi grâce à l'esclavage moderne, vous continuez vos profits. Vos moyens d'oppression sont vitaux à votre système capitaliste. Mais croyez pas que vos violences se feront sans sacrifice. S'il n'y a pas de frontières pour l'oppression, alors il n'y a pas de frontières pour la révolution. Vous méritez la destitution, pas les prises de décision. La révolte spontanée suffira pas, on s'organisera par millions. Rendez-nous les vies que vous nous avez confisquées. Vous avez tout volé jusqu'à notre putain d'indignité. Vos policiers réprimés tuent en toute impunité. Allez les quartiers, gilets jaunes et jeunesse du monde entier. Fuck le racisme d'état, oui, nique la police nationale. Black lives matter, y'a longtemps qu'on sonne l'alarme, on a le point levé, qu'on soit noir, blanc ou arabe. Pas de justice, pas de paix, donc c'est la guerre qu'on déclare. Violence raciste sociale ou violence patriarcale, même combat contre le gouvernement, le capital, we can't breathe. C'est quoi que vous comprenez pas aux dirigeants du monde entier, rangez vos bla bla bla.
Unsere Leute kommen zurück auf die Straßen. Zu viele Jahre habt ihr meine Schwestern geschlagen. Kämpfe für bessere Tage, ich glaub die Message ist klar. Fick die Polizei und diesen rassistischen Staat. Faschos warten Untergrund auf das nächste Attentat. Kolbstraße, NSU, AfD im Bundestag. Polizisten machen in der Köln Jagd auf Shisha-Bars. Journalisten schreiben Märchen, reden von den Clans. Rassisten in Uniform, Uri Jalloh, das war Mord. Und wenn wir uns wehren, schicken sie die Hunde vor. Robocops sich Kokain, schlagen auf die Demo ein. Keine Cops in unseren Reihen, jeder Bulle bleibt ein Schwein. Sie sind nur die Jünger der Gewalt vom Vaterstaat. Kopf auf den Asphalt, für uns bleibt das fast der Hart. Werde niemand schweigen, kämpfe für die Freiheit, Damana. Wir schlagen zurück, yalla yalla Migrantifa.
Fuck le racisme d'état, oui, nique la police nationale. Black lives matter, y'a longtemps qu'on sonne l'alarme, on a le point levé, qu'on soit noir, blanc ou arabe. Pas de justice, pas de paix, donc c'est la guerre qu'on déclare. Violence raciste sociale ou violence patriarcale, même combat contre le gouvernement, le capital, we can't breathe. C'est quoi que vous comprenez pas aux dirigeants du monde entier, rangez vos bla bla bla. Abusive criminalization, racist deportations, profit accumulation and mass incarceration. Your system doesn't function without sex
sexism and racism. Your violence won't be normalized if that's your expectation. Nothing to lose or bring your wealth to the ground. The anger and the pain is only turning into power. All you fucking leaders can go and hide inside your towers. We're organizing, getting stronger by the hour.
Cops are only there to serve the rich and the wealthy. Chains are just another form of modern day slavery. Pray to push us down, but the world is awakening. Coming together to fight the mess you created. Nothing changed, so we're back out on the streets. Black lives matter, it's the time to succeed. George Floyd, rest in power, taste of freedom is sweet. No justice, no peace. Fuck the police.
Fuck le racisme d'état, oui, nique la police nationale. Black lives matter, y'a longtemps qu'on sonne l'alarme. On a le point levé, qu'on soit noir, blanc ou arabe. Pas de justice, pas de paix, donc c'est la guerre qu'on déclare. Violence raciste sociale ou violence patriarcale. Même combat contre le gouvernement, le capital, we can breathe. C'est quoi que vous comprenez pas aux dirigeants du monde entier? Rangez vos bla bla bla.
We're just going to move on now to some broader topics. You know, looking back at what happened in Virginia earlier this year, with the various gun control proposals, you know, thousands of people out in the streets, protesting that. There were some, anti-fascists and anti-capitalists that were joining those with, you know, critical anti-racist, anti-white supremacy stances as well. I'm just curious, what do you think the trajectory will be in terms of the Democrats' relation to guns, and how will that impact, if at all, what's happening on the far right or within gun culture?
So I have absolutely no doubt whatsoever that the Democrats are just going to continue with their historical approach of addressing issues that affect their donor class, which is to say rich white suburbanites, which would explain their obsession with high capacity magazines and so-called assault weapons, and their continued unwillingness to seriously and rigorously address the actual root causes of gun violence. So in 2008, it's worth remembering that the Democrats controlled both the White House and both houses of Congress, and they still chose not to repeal the Dickey Amendment, allowing research into actual root causes of gun violence, which to me is a very clear demonstration that they don't actually care. And all of their gun control measures are entirely performative and meant to appease the kind of people who send them money, essentially. You know, because the numbers are out there that unfortunately 2 out of 3 gun deaths in this country are due to suicide, and almost all gun violence involves handguns and a very small number of shots fired. So constantly hemming and hawing about assault weapons and high capacity magazines is not at all the solution to any of these problems, but it looks good. It sells well on C-SPAN. And that's why they do it. But in addition to that, the Democrats have never honestly taken right-wing extremism seriously. And I don't expect that they're going to do anything about right-wing extremism, except maybe throw a couple more dollars at the police, who are then going to go arrest more black people instead of actually tackling white supremacy as they always do. So unfortunately, I mean, not to sound like a super downer or anything, but I do believe that the right's going to continue to arm itself, that we're going to be experiencing more stochastic terrorism, more mass shootings and things like that, while the Democrats concentrate on, I don't know, whatever stupid thing it is they're concentrating on, and our marginalized comrades, especially in urban areas, are going to continue to be subjected to over-policing, unjust punishment, and it's just going to perpetuate this cycle of incarceration and disenfranchisement and violence, and then the Democrats are going to blame the people who they're oppressing for that violence. So, yeah, I wish I had a happier answer for you.
You know, it's so sad and ironic because, I mean, you brought up, you know, this donor class base of kind of like wealthy, you know, liberals in big cities. And, you know, the fear, of course, is, high capacity weapons, you know, basically this, you know, crime creeping from the urban core into the suburbs or something like that. But then on the other hand, if you look at the right, it's almost kind of, it's the same sort of thing. It's interesting. I was watching a video of somebody that was against, you know, all these gun laws that were being proposed in Virginia. And they said, like, well, I would be fine if they did this in the big cities, you know, in the urban cities. 'Cause those people need the laws, you know, we out here, it's totally coded racial.
Yeah. I can hear the dog whistle just
now. Yeah. But it's funny because both sides are doing it. And the people that claim, you know, that they want gun rights for all don't realize that they're playing into it just as much as the other side is.
Well, that's working on the assumption that the Democrats and the Republicans are actually on opposite sides.
For sure, yeah. Just interesting. They're playing kind of the same game. They're just playing it, like, to different people.
Yeah.
Well, it sells guns.
Yeah, yeah, and we're going to talk about that in a little bit. So, actually, we're going to talk about that right now. So, under Trump, there's been an explosion of gun sales by folks. You know, I mean, just it's so funny that NRA TV, from my understanding, is crashing and burning. But I mean, if you watch some of their content, it is just like out there. I mean, just the amount of, like, you know, Antifa is going to come and kick your puppy and kill your grandma, and just, you know, Black Lives Matter is going to eat you. Just like all this stuff just totally out the door. But, you know, like you said, it sells guns. I'm just curious, you know, looking back on the activity specifically with training that groups like SRA has done, also John Brown Gun Club, although, you know, obviously you don't have to speak for them. I'm just curious, you know, what would you say about the outcome of that specific organizing just around, you know, teaching people, you know, basic gun safety, how to use firearms? What is the outcome of that been, like, looking back now?
Well, over the last couple of years, like, I'm greatly encouraged to see that we're starting to take the idea of arming ourselves for community defense seriously. And when I say ourselves, I mean people on the left and people who are not quote-unquote traditional gun owners. I would say that we have been doing a pretty good job of training people. The demand vastly outstrips the supply, but I will say that in my time as director of instruction or the chair of the instruction committee, as I previously were, we've approved several dozen instructors on top of the people who've paid for their own training to become SRA affiliated firearms trainers. And just in our Southern New England chapter, I think we have five trainers. I know that I'm booked out through the end of January on classes, running them as best I can in the midst of this pandemic, and our other trainers are similarly booked up. And I have done no advertising, and I'm still booked out a month and a half in advance. And on top of that, the types of students that I'm getting through my classes, because of the way that we originally engaged with the community, these are the types of people that would avoid the NRA class. I believe that out of the 130 or so people that I've trained just since the end of July, about one out of every five of them has been a queer Black woman, which is exactly the opposite, you know, diametrically opposed to the sort of person that one would typically imagine as a gun owner. And just to loop back to something that Birdie said earlier about not seeing, you know, any people of color and hardly any women in gun advertising, I think part of that and the impression that I get from my students and talking to them after class and just generally is that a lot of the people that we are engaging with want to become gun owners, but they don't want to become gun people. I'm sure you know what I mean when I say gun people. And I think that plays a lot into how people don't even realize that so many of these non-traditional gun owners are starting to get into things is because they are not yelling about how they have 10,000 guns and, you know, a rifle that they bought like last week just because it was on sale or something like that. You know, these are people that are buying guns for practical reasons, in the same way that someone who buys a Toyota Camry isn't necessarily a car person. You know, a lot of these people have no intention of becoming gun people.
You're listening to It's Going Down, part of the Channel Zero Anarchist Podcast Network. You can follow us at @IGD_news on Twitter and on Instagram and Mastodon. Check us out online at itsgoingdown.org. And if you can, please go to itsgoingdown.org/shop to sign up to donate monthly. Without your support, we cannot continue into 2021. We need your help to continue forward. Please go to itsgoingdown.org/shop and give us a one-time donation or sign up to donate monthly. Thanks a lot. Let's get back to it.
Yeah. Oh, man, I'm feeling that. Like, I just think it's so important that we celebrate, like, where we are right now. Like, folks, like, marginalized folks are just, like, becoming more activated to, you know, I don't say like the potential of liberation. I believe that liberation is a promise, like that it is coming. But like, you know, they're really feeling the vibe of like by any means necessary. And, you know, for me, that means that folks are moving out of that space of despair. And, you know, to the point about like traditional gun people, like, yeah, you know, I get that vibe that it's like, it's not really about, you know, I personally, like, sometimes people talk to me about really specific things like AK versus AR, like any of those, that like that discourse happens. And it's just like my eyes glaze over. I have no interest in like becoming particularly like knowledgeable about everything about gun culture. Like for me, firearms are a tool in the toolbox. Like we're talking about just like people adding more tools so that they can, you know, serve themselves and also, you know, their families, which builds out to their communities. And so, you know, we're just saying like, this is one of the many things you can add to that work. So you're like a marginalized, in my case, like I'm a Black woman who owns firearms, but I'm not on forums. You'll never find me there. I'm never going to have like a gun show where I show you bullshit. Like it's just one of the many tools for liberation. And yeah, I think our really big success is just being here in the space and like really unapologetically taking up space in a two-way gun culture.
Well, that's a great segue to our next question is that, you know, over the years, people have done things like table at gun shows, you know, sort of intervening within the wider gun culture. I'm curious, you know, what does SRA think about that? Is that, and you all, I mean, is that something that needs to be done? Is it something that the right just has such a monopoly on, you know, it's better to build an alternative and leave that behind? Or, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
I'll start here. And it's important to preface this by, of course, saying that I am approaching this as a person of color. And the real question is, with the limited resources that we have, you know, considering that there's 10,000 SRA members to, what is it, like 6 million NRA members, with the limited resources that we have and the risk to reward ratio, is there really a benefit in trying to reach out to wider gun culture? And I think that maybe there are for people who don't look like me and don't look like Bertie, but it's much easier for us to get a new shooter from a marginalized community trained than it is to try to deprogram someone who's been immersed in toxic right-wing gun culture for decades. And it's substantially more rewarding, too. Let me be frank. The average attendee of a gun show, in my opinion, is a racist reactionary, and interacting with them is dangerous, and I don't perceive a benefit commensurate with the danger of getting to know them or tabling in their midst. You know, it's just not worth it for a lot of people who are in the SRA to try to reach out to the groups that are actively hostile in a way that presents real danger, you know?
Yeah, I think this is, I'm just sort of laughing. This is probably a strange occurrence for a podcast that is like, two people of color talking about guns and this whole question of like reaching, I'm going to say like reaching across the aisle, even though that's not right. And we're, and like, my answer is also a long no, like, but yeah, you know, the way I feel about it is, cause this does come up a lot in the SRA, came up a lot in our forums. It's come up even in our chapter. And it's, yeah, it's that question. Do we want to put work into deprogramming white supremacists? And there are organizations that do that, and they are very good at it. And, you know, what I appreciate about those organizations is that most of them are led by former white supremacists. So they just understand that work in a way that I don't think that the SRA could really commit that way. And I think, you know, folks are like, well, yeah, you just dabble in a bunch of different things. Like, no, we're going to do the things that are, you know, our mission and values. And we're going to learn how to do that and do that really well before we start flying all over the place. But I also, you know, I'm a be real that like, I don't think the SRA is a place where someone who needs to be doing that hard, like internal work on themselves should be as their first stop, like, on that journey. And I'm not really sure really if that should be, you know, we should be a stop for them at all on that path towards deprogramming and healing. And yeah, you know, for people who don't look like us, you know, like, who have that experience of almost being sucked into far right ideology, or maybe even having it for some span of time, I think it can feel like a really deeply, like, personal win to de-radicalize someone that they see going down that path. And I also think it's a sort of saviorship, right? That ignores the existence of an equally capable other, like myself here. And I think that those folks need to consider why they want to, you know, expound that much energy on that sort of effort. You know, we talked earlier about being an org that's 10,000 members strong. And I think there's a tendency for leftist orgs to celebrate numbers growth. And you know, like, I'm just like, well, what do numbers really mean? Like, earlier you actually were asking us about, like, okay, you got 10,000 people. Like, what do you all do? Like, that's a valid question. And for me, you know, it's like, you can have 10,000 people, but if people are just joining, like, they're paying their $25 a year, but they're, you know, they don't have anything to contribute. It's really more that they don't have a space to contribute and they don't have a space to learn. And I'm really more about, like, providing those folks with, you know, quality instruction and support. You know, like, because they're members of the SRA are already in communities. Like, we're a community ourselves, but also, like, geographically, they're in all these different communities. And I'm really more interested in building those people who are out there already doing the work already. And so, yeah, you know, that kind of comes around to the Range Project, because sometimes people are like, you know, is this about recruitment? Are y'all going to do, like, hella, like, if I want to go to the Range, do I need to join the SRA? And I'm just really clear about, like, no, this is not for SRA members. We are not going to, like, force you to be involved in this. Like, what we really want to do is have this space where, like, when somebody says to me, yeah, I've been thinking about, you know, taking a look at guns and at least figuring out, you know, like, what's the difference between a pistol and a rifle or something, I can just be like, yeah, I got you. Like, come out to the Range. Like, it's, you know, really 100% supposed to be, you know, it's really just about this community and about saying, like, yeah, you can come through. And, you know, whether or not, like, people want to join, all we're really trying to do is just, like, you know, put those tools in their toolbox.
Last weekend, for the second week in a row, an anti-fascist was shot by a far-right Trump supporter in Olympia. There's also been armed anti-fascist groups or formations at different demonstrations. I'm just curious, you know, based on everything that the SRA has learned since Charlottesville onwards and everything in between, does the presence of armed formations or groups of anti-fascists part of larger demonstrations, do you feel that this keeps people safe at demonstrations and, I guess, in one way to put it, like, increase the temperature, turn up the heat? I'm just curious your thoughts.
So the first thing that I want to say there is that the SRA itself does not participate in demonstrations or direct actions as an organization. So the opinions I'm about to say are my own. And when I answer this question, I'm not speaking for the SRA. But I do have opinions on this, and which is that I believe that the presence of armed groups of anti-fascists both keeps people safe and increases the temperature, because the presence of a firearm is always an escalation. Like, don't be mistaken about that. You can never de-escalate a situation with a gun. That's the wrong word to use. So the object of being armed isn't de-escalation. It's to create too much risk for the other side to provoke a confrontation, and to make it clear that any victory that they might have would be a Pyrrhic one, you know. So when you see all these Proud Boys running around in packs beating the crap out of people, you never see them beating the crap out of someone with an AR-15. But it's also extremely important for this reason that the left avoid fetishizing guns in the etymological sense of the word. The gun is not a magic weapon. It's not a totem, you know, it's a tool, and we have to treat it that way. So Bernie's mentioned, you know, putting more tools in the toolbox. The gun is not a fix-all solution. You know, just having a bunch of guns is not going to necessarily keep people safe. The reason for an armed presence at a demonstration is that we can't depend on the state to provide any kind of real protection because they're ideologically allied with the right. So we have to keep ourselves safe, but just as they're probably honestly more important than the guns, especially in the work that the street medics and things do, is the training and the wherewithal to employ these tools properly. You know, so we don't want to see and we don't want to be rather roaming packs of, you know, heavily armed individuals, you know, fulfilling the right wing's wet dream of being the good guy with the gun, you know, the rugged individual who's fighting off these, you know, hordes of unwashed black and yellow masses. You know, that isn't and can't be us. You know, we can't, you know, superficially, it may look like us being armed is adopting the methodology of the right, but it's inherently different what we are doing. You know, we are providing community defense, and we're attempting, and if we are to continue demonstrating armed, we need to do so in a disciplined, trained, organized way that ensures that we're using firearms only in defense of life, to keep people safe, and never as a tool of domination or control or capitalist defense of private property, you know, you know, with all due disrespect to Kyle Rittenhouse.
Well, what do you all think is going to happen with far-right formations? You know, we brought them up under Biden. It seems like a lot of liberals have just kind of like entered into this feeling that, like, you know, oh, the bad people have been defeated, we can go on with our lives. But if, you know, everything that we've seen in D.C., I mean, it could get so much worse in many ways. Now they have an enemy they can unite around, this dirty communist Biden.
Oh, as a proud anarcho-Bidenist, no.
Yeah, if you were asking in terms of what do you think the Biden administration is going to do about these far right formations, I literally just wrote the word nothing in my notes for this interview.
Yeah, I wrote, can I just laugh, which is what I'm doing. Yeah, we, you know, they got brunch to go to and stuff. I don't really see, you know, the libs really coming out to support or doing anything to stop what's already happening, been happening for a long ass time in this country.
What do you see the far right itself doing, I guess, is the other question.
They gonna keep doing what they doing. I don't know if they care so much about elections. I mean, I feel like I don't even to a degree. So yeah, I think they're gonna, I mean, though the Proud Boys are having some sort of little implosion, ain't they? There's always some drama going on over there. But yeah, I think they're gonna stay the course.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with Birdie on that one. Unfortunately, I think that what we're seeing is that you know, now that Biden is elected, most of the libs feel like the problem is over, and there's just no evidence that that's true. If anything, they're steadily escalating right now, and historically, you know, it doesn't take a humongous percentage of any given group to really cause a lot of trouble. You know, I don't want to adopt 3% of rhetoric or anything like that, but you know, with as big as the right wing is, you know, with 70 something million people voting for Donald Trump, and you see that just a few thousand Proud Boys are able to cause as much chaos and harm as they are, you know, I just see it escalating, unfortunately, especially as this pandemic continues to drag on and people are desperate and angry, and a lot of people are lashing out from the right.
In the Anti-Fascist Network interview, SRA members mentioned one of the biggest issues facing us right now is the coming together of the police and the far right. I'm just curious, you know, any other thoughts you have on that?
Well, I mean, I think that the far right and the police have always been joined at the hip. I mean, wasn't Rage Against the Machine rapping about that like 30 years ago? It's just now becoming more apparent to the wider populace because everything is on video now. You know, I think the best thing that we can do about this is to continue our work to reduce the influence and presence of the police in marginalized communities. by helping to build a community defense and to decrease dependence on the carceral state. You know, the more we can encourage communities to build parallel power and to not call the police and to keep the police out of their communities through passive methods, you know, the safer they are, because the police do not represent safety to marginalized communities. And so we don't participate in direct action as an organization, as I mentioned, so I won't speak to that. But there are specifically in terms of confrontations with the far right, there's many groups that have done great work in developing tactics suitable for today's protest and demonstration environment. And personally, I'm hopeful that that knowledge and those skills get more widely disseminated, so that organizations that do engage in direct action are able to do so as effectively as possible. Because all we can really do is to build up our communities and try to survive sometimes.
So last question. In the same interview, you mentioned that gun prices might actually go down, that Trump is going to leave office. Explain how that's going to work.
So this one's interesting to me, because I've actually worked in the firearms manufacturing industry for about the last decade or so. And historically, gun prices always spike in election years, especially when it becomes clear that the Democrat is favored. And the gun dealers know this. So they increase their prices during periods of increased tension like this, you know, as demand goes up, supply goes down, price goes up. And I can tell you that the gun factories basically run 24/7 in normal times. So firearms manufacturers don't have a lot of surge capacity. They can make guns as fast as they make guns, and especially when you pair this election year with the pandemic, it's very difficult to increase staffing in any way that's safe. Not that capitalists typically give a shit if anyone is safe or not, but a lot of people don't want to go to work in a factory at a new job, so it's been difficult to build a new capacity even slowly. But I think what happens, you know, when the Democrat gets elected and they don't, you know, immediately go door to door and have, you know, Beto O'Rourke personally take your AR-15 away, is a lot of people realize, oh man, it was really kind of stupid of me to buy like 8 AR-15s because I've always got two things to begin with. And then, you know, they flood the secondary market with it, which drives the prices right back down. It's basically gun prices go up because everyone thinks that Joe Biden is going to magically teleport their guns into the ocean, essentially. There isn't a lot of logic to it. It's entirely fear-driven. The whole firearms marketing ethos is fear-driven, aside from the occasional hunting season ad that they run, you know? There's always that element of you need this gun. It's 2% better at killing. Well, let's be honest. It's 2% better at killing brown people, so you need it. You have to buy another gun and another gun and another gun. And that's basically how the marketing cycle works.
Well, really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us. Anything else you want to touch on that we didn't get a chance to talk about?
Well, I mean, I'd love to talk a little bit more about the Range Project and what we're hoping to see and what it will offer the people that we just don't have a lot of access to down. I'm speaking again as someone from Connecticut with a little bit of experience with what I've heard of Massachusetts and everything. One of the things that we are really excited about with this project is that we're planning on positioning it probably in New Hampshire, which is a state where all of our guns will actually be legal. If you're not from the Northeast, it can be a little difficult to understand just how weird our gun laws are and how guns that are legal in Connecticut are not legal in Rhode Island, and Massachusetts guns aren't legal here in Connecticut, and how nice it will be on top of everything else just to say, oh, I can definitely take my guns at the SRA range and also be able to shoot it out past 100 yards, because there's almost nowhere in Connecticut to shoot past 100 yards. So this project is very exciting, not just from an ideological way, but from a very practical way too. We're very excited to have a range where you don't, where we're actually able to really focus on marksmanship and things like that by providing just a long range in a place where you can bring any platform you want. Like, that on its own is a big win for us.
I guess the last thing is, where should people go if they want more information on the SRA?
So if people want more information about the SRA, they should go to socialistra.org. And if they are interested in supporting our range project, you said you're going to link our fundraiser in the description for this episode. So I would encourage people to do both.
This has been the It's Going Down podcast. Check itsgoingdown.org for daily updates, columns, action reports, and news. Go to itsgoingdown.org/shop to support us and follow us on all social media platforms. IGD, your daily resource for insurgent proletarian life.